from the heart of the Forest City, this is a Craig Needles podcast brought to you by Lexus of London. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
Yes, it is the Craig Needles podcast here at ClassicRock981.com, LondonNewsToday.ca, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts on your favorite app. And we have a lot to discuss today. I want to get first to an interview. And we're going to get to some municipal election stuff later, and there's some Hockey Canada news that came down today. We're recording this on a Tuesday that I'm going to talk about after we have our interview conversation here. But you may have seen a report from Canadians for Tax Fairness that came out last week. And the author of the report is D.T. Cochrane. And the report says as follows. Canada's biggest corporations were able to avoid, via the tax code, $30 billion. Dollars in taxes last year. That's 30 with a B. That's a lot of money, folks. That's a lot of money. Now, does that mean that these corporations are doing illegal things in order to avoid paying taxes? Not necessarily. Not necessarily. But does that mean that Canada's tax code needs to get a little bit tighter? Yeah, it does. Because what winds up happening is that folks like you and me, who do not have our entire accounting department, an entire accounting department rather, at our fingertips in order to find the coolest ways to avoid paying taxes, we wind up paying more of the freight. Our corporate tax rate, relatively speaking, not too bad. And that's in the report too. So tighten up some of the loopholes and maybe we're in a better spot. And of course, there's going to be corporations that are advocating against that. So I want to talk about the report, how we came up with that $30 billion number and what potential things could happen to make that $30 billion number a little bit lower. And to do that, I want to talk to the author of the report, who is D.T. Cochrane, who works with Canadians for Tax Fairness and joins us here on the Craig Needles podcast. D.T., really good that you could have a conversation with us today. Glad you could give us a few minutes. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you very much for having me on.
So just tell me how you came to this number, $30 billion less. That's a huge, massive number, obviously. How did we get there?
It's a huge, massive number. We didn't expect it to be so huge. The procedure is relatively straightforward. We looked at the profits, the pre-tax profits of these companies, and calculated the amount of tax they would pay at the federal and provincial statutory rate, and compared that to the amount of tax that they actually paid. And the difference between those two numbers is $30 billion. That's $30 billion in tax avoidance in 2021, which was a massive increase from the average tax avoidance before the pandemic by these same companies. Before the pandemic, they averaged about $13.5 billion in tax avoidance. So they more than doubled their tax avoidance in 2021.
That is, on some levels, impressive when it comes to their tax lawyers and their accountants, but other levels, absolutely enraging if you're someone who is, let's be honest, footing more of the bill, a higher percentage of the bill than you should be, because the federal government is not collecting as much as they should be from the folks at the top.
It's enraging, frankly, on every single level for the reason that you mentioned, for the fact that governments will likely use revenue shortfalls as justification for cuts to essential goods and services that Canadians depend on, but also the fact that the record high profits in 2021 are partially the outcome of ultra high profit margins. That means that corporations, their high profits in 2021 were from them contributing to inflation. So the affordability crisis that Canadians are experiencing, that actually put money into the corporate coffers. And now the corporations are doing everything that they can to avoid putting some of that money into the government coffers, which could be used to address the affordability crisis.
Yeah, well, a hell of a circle. Tell me, DT, just give me some examples of some of the companies that are on the list that you looked at. Like, people would know them, but you know, you mentioned groceries. I would suspect that Loblaw is going to be on there, right?
Loblaw's actually is not on this huge tax avoidance list. So there's not many things to give Loblaw's credit for, but they don't make our list of top tax avoiders. Up at the top, we have Brookfield Asset Management, which is a company that's probably familiar to some people and maybe not to others. It's a huge finance company that is just buying up assets at an astronomical rate. They're growing hugely powerful within our economy. And combined, 2017 through 2021, they avoided paying over $6 billion in taxes. Right behind them is Canadian Natural Resources. It's a less familiar oil and gas company. They also, 2017 through 2021, avoided paying over $6 billion in taxes. The top 20 includes four of the five big banks. The Royal Bank was at 26th, so fell out of the top 20. It includes Bell, everyone's favorite telecom company. It also includes the pipeline giants, Enbridge and TC Energy, formerly TransCanada. So the companies that are included with huge individual tax gaps really run the gamut of the Canadian economy.
Well, that's fascinating. I assume Loblaw's on there, and hey, maybe this is me being being a little aggressive in my assumptions, but I do remember the story from 2020 when they were, you know, in kind of a court battle over skipping out on $368 million in taxes. So I assume that, hey, this might come up here. But I guess the companies that are on this list are talking about numbers of dollars far bigger than $368 million.
Absolutely. This doesn't mean that Loblaws is not engaged in what might be less than desirable forms of tax avoidance. But as far as the numbers go, they're not doing the same things at the same scale as a TC Energy, an Enbridge, a Brookfield Asset Management, which also doesn't mean that there aren't reasons to be critical of Loblaws. We do know that they were pushing up their profit margins in 2021. So similarly, are more than passing along their own costs, just as far as the tax paid aspect goes. Not a reason for including Loblaws in our criticism.
Entirely fair. Let's go back to your criticism of some of the companies you mentioned. Hey, maybe they have executives who are listening to us talk right now and saying, hey, we use this legal tax loophole and that legal tax loophole and our accountant found this or whatever it happens to be. What would you say to that is, hey, we're not breaking the law here, so why is everybody being mean to us?
We're not accusing any of these companies particularly of breaking the law. We've used the term tax avoidance, which is a bit of a catch-all term. It includes both the perfectly legal tax deductions that governments offer companies for things that maybe we actually want, like research and development. If they're paying for research and development, we give them a tax break to try to encourage that type of activity. So it includes these perfectly legal deductions, but then it moves into a grayer area of tax planning where financial transactions will be organized in a way that push taxes down. These are of lesser desirability and also push at the boundaries of our tax code. And then at the illegal end, you have tax evasion. And one form of tax evasion is reporting profits in low tax jurisdictions, despite not actually making the profits in that jurisdiction. And corporations might actually even use legal mechanisms to do this, but we certainly think that kind of thing should be stopped.
So that's on the feds then, right? Tighten up your tax code.
This is absolutely on the feds. Our criticism is aimed much more at the government than at the corporations. Frankly, corporations are going to do what corporations do, and that is to serve their bottom line. They're not moral actors. They're not acting in the best interest of Canadians. They're acting only in the best interest of themselves. So of course, they're going to take advantage of every possible tax loophole that's available to them. We require the government to make sure that them taking advantage of those loopholes isn't excessively harming Canadians. And so the first step that we're asking for is for the government to explain what has happened here. How were the corporations able to increase their tax avoidance by more than double what it had been before the pandemic? We want them to offer an explanation in an incredibly transparent way so Canadians can assess whether or not we think the corporation should be allowed to reduce their taxes in this way.
Yeah. And I would suggest that most Canadians would say to you, absolutely not. Like, I think that if you did polling on this, you'd see some pretty significant numbers towards one way. So what makes one wonder, why are governments so, let's just say, they're kind of playing real nice in the sandbox with these corporations they probably know are avoiding taxes in these ways?
Yeah, I mean, these companies are incredibly powerful. We note in the report that these 123 companies have combined revenues of more than twice the GDP of Western Canada. That's how huge and powerful these companies are. And they use that power in all sorts of ways, not least of which is influence on government. And we're not claiming anything nefarious here. It's that they have the resources to put towards bombarding government with arguments against greater transparency, greater accountability, and higher taxes. Of course they're going to do that. Why wouldn't they? It's them doing what they do. It's a way of serving their bottom line. But government needs to stand up to these corporations, and Canadians need to put pressure on government to stop letting corporations have so much influence over policy.
Give me some suggestions then as far as policies that would make sense in order to cut this $30 billion number down a little bit.
We have two quick and easy things that could be done. The first is just to raise the federal corporate income tax rate. It's been at 15% for a long time now. That is a post-war low, and it was lowered to 15% with the promise of all sorts of benefits like greater productivity, better jobs, which we have not seen. We're actually seeing less investment by Canadian corporations under the 15% corporate income tax rate. Raising it to 20% would bring in billions in additional revenue and would still be a remarkably low corporate income tax rate. The other thing we're calling for is that Canada follow the US lead and implement a minimum tax on corporate book profits. So corporations are able to say one thing to their shareholders, look how much profit we made, and they say another thing to tax authorities. They're reporting these two figures under kind of different accounting frameworks. What the alternative minimum corporate tax does is, for the US, puts 15% on the profits that companies are claiming to their shareholders. So while it doesn't close specific individual loopholes, it puts a bit of a floor on corporate tax avoidance. And they can take advantage of different loopholes, but only to a point. So if Canada were to follow their lead, if they would have had something like this in place in 2021, it would have brought in an additional $11 billion in revenue. So it wouldn't have fully closed that gap, but it would have gone a long way to getting more revenue for Canadian governments.
Well, there's a couple of suggestions right there. How open do you think that the government might be to this? I know that you have called on the federal revenue minister, Diane Lebouthillier, to look into this. What's the response been like?
We haven't heard any response yet. We understand that the minister and her staff are very busy, so I'm sure they have many things on their plates, and we're happy to hear from them anytime. The current government has, you know, said some things about their concerns over this and related issues, and we believe them when they say that they see this as a problem. The fact that they're acting so slowly and doing so little means they don't understand the urgency of the problem. All that will happen is these companies will grow more powerful, and it will make it more difficult to try to address this. But it can be addressed. The government just needs to act to show Canadians that they're not just the puppets of the corporations serving corporate interests, because understandably, many people feel that.
Yeah, and I, you know, you mentioned, you know, she's busy and the department's busy, and I'm sure that's true. But if I were the revenue minister and someone said to me, oh, by the way, here's something that's shorting you $30 billion in revenue, that'd probably be the first thing I'd want to handle in the morning. You know, call me cynical, but that's kind of the first thing I'd want to get to. So maybe they should be drawing up a little bit more of a response, in my opinion.
Yeah, we're hoping that we'll hear something from them, that they will offer some kind of response and something beyond a "we'll look into it." We are calling on them to look into it, but we need more specifics than that. And we need a promise that they will look into it in a totally transparent way so Canadians can see exactly how this happened.
So obviously you mentioned there's going to be a fight here from some of these companies, and again, that's fine. They're allowed to fight. They're allowed to tell politicians how they feel about things. So I guess it comes down to, are politicians going to be perhaps, you know, show the courage to say, hey, you know, I think this is probably the worst thing for the country, as opposed to the worst thing for me personally, to leave the system in place.
Yeah, I suspect on a personal level, many of them recognize that this is a huge problem, but they often need a bit of incentive, and that incentive mostly comes from their constituents. So people need to contact ministers, they need to contact their representative to say, I'm sick and tired of corporations getting away with not paying their fair share of taxes. Why should I be expected to pay my taxes if they're going to avoid billions of dollars in taxes? So people need to put some pressure on to balance the pressure that undoubtedly the companies are going to bring to bear to make sure that things don't change, because as it exists, clearly it's serving their interests.
Yeah, and that's the key thing, and perhaps the last thing I'll say on the subject before I wrap up our little chat here is, I pay my taxes. You know, they come off my paycheck, just like everybody else listening to this podcast, and whatever it happens to be at the end of the year, I write the check, and that's fine. But it does frustrate me when I see folks that have, or companies that have, a whole lot more money than I ever will, and they don't want to write their check. It feels a little unfair to me. So yeah, I think this should be a pretty easy retail politics issue if somebody wants to make it that.
I would think so. I think, you know, no one likes paying their taxes. No one likes paying for anything. We like to get stuff for free.
Yeah, free stuff is awesome.
I don't want to pay the grocery store for my groceries, but I do it because I understand that that's how the system works. And so I pay my taxes because I understand that a lot of publicly provided goods and services are what my taxes are paying for. And corporations also benefit a lot from those publicly provided goods and services. So it's galling that they're avoiding paying so much. But of course, it's corporations doing what corporations are going to do. So government needs to act. So corporations doing what corporations are going to do is not so harmful to the rest of us.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't love paying my property taxes, but I like that my kids can go to the library. And if something happens and my house starts on fire, I like there are people that are going to show up and try to put it out. And that's just the cost of doing business. If you want those things to exist, you're going to have to pay your taxes. Sorry, but that's just the way things are.
Absolutely. And I think people are willing, as much as they would maybe prefer not to have to, they will pay because they know that it brings good things to them. But they expect that taxes will be distributed fairly, and that those who are above them in our economic on our economic ladder are going to be contributing more. So when you see corporations getting away with avoiding so much of their tax bill, it understandably is incredibly upsetting. But thankfully, we do know that there are actions that can be taken. We don't have to just accept this as inevitable. Government can do things to reduce this problem.
Anything else you want to say on this, DT, before I wrap up our conversation here?
The power of corporations in our economy is really at the root of this. And it's something that needs much more thorough investigation. We need to understand all of the different ways that corporations are in our lives, and often provide almost a governmental role. They almost regulate certain aspects of our lives. And whatever issues we might have with government, it is orders of magnitude more accountable than corporations. And so we need our public institutions to exercise the powers that they have to check this corporate power, because we have many, many crises that need to be addressed. And we can't expect that corporations are going to be the institutions addressing those problems. Government is going to have to do that. And government needs resources. And tax is the most important way that they collect those resources. And so they need to be collecting the taxes that corporations owe.
There you go. Well, DT, this is a great conversation. Really glad you could come on and explain the report with me. I really appreciate it. Thank you for doing it.
Thank you very much for having me on.
That's DT Cochran, who is an economist and did some work with Canadians for Tax Fairness. If you want a link to the report, I will put it in the description of this podcast. And the report, of course, says that $30 billion-ish is being lost to tax avoidance by Canada's biggest corporations. And I want to reiterate what DT says. Look, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, this company's done something illegal or that company's done something illegal. They're doing legal things. Companies are going to try to save money. I've got no problem with that. I think the rules need to be recalibrated, so it's not as easy to do that. That's all. Especially at the very, very top. Your small business, do I care about you finding a few ways to avoid taxes? Not particularly, no. If you're running a company worth billions of dollars, maybe we should have a conversation about that. That's all I'm saying. All right, I've got some Hockey Canada thoughts that I want to share coming up in just a little bit. I have got some very brief election thoughts I want to share coming up in just a little bit. We are less than 2 weeks away from London's municipal election. But first, I do want to remind you that the Craig Needles podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Lexus of London. Lifestyle with the drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting at the award-winning Lexus of London. Luxury to find. You can pick out yours today at Lexus of London, which you can find at 1065 Warrencliffe Road South and online at lexusoflondon.com. Let's talk Hockey Canada very briefly. We got the news today that the entire board has resigned, and that Scott Smith is no longer at Hockey Canada. He's out too. This is a good thing. This needed to happen. And I'm glad that sponsors such as Canadian Tire and TELUS and Nike and Sobeys and Tim Hortons and Scotiabank decided, hey, we're not going to be involved in Hockey Canada so long as this board is part of the deal. That is what made this decision happen. That is what pushed these people who, quite frankly, needed to go out the door. Andrea Skinner, the interim board chair, resigned on Saturday, the news being leaked during the ninth inning of a Toronto Blue Jays playoff game. This was obviously an attempt at covering up the news, trying to make it so as few people as possible talked about it, because, hey, everyone's distracted by the Jays. Eventually, I think these people at Hockey Canada realized that there was no way to avoid this. They were going. The board had to be gone. When Andrea Skinner went to Ottawa and told members of parliament, oh, woe is us, there'll be no one to keep the lights on if the entire board of Hockey Canada leaves. I want you to tell me, and you can tweet me at Needles on News, if the hockey rink is still functioning for your kid this week. I'm going to go ahead and bet that it is, that the lights are in fact still coming on, but you tell me if I'm wrong about that. I think that the best way to sum up the Hockey Canada situation, politically, and to figure out where Canadians are at on this, is you are not going to find a lot of agreement on key political issues or key Canadian issues in Ottawa from all the big parties. But holy smokes, do you not find lockstep agreement from the Liberals, the Conservatives, the NDP, and the Bloc Québécois? I don't think there are any Greens on these committees, but I'm sure they agree too, that Hockey Canada's leadership had to be gone. They all completely agreed. All of them. So, yeah, they had to go. That had to be the end of the road for them. The sponsors wanted them gone. The politicians, who, by the way, also act as funders in some cases, wanted them gone. Parents wanted them gone. Former players wanted them gone. Sheldon Kennedy wanted them gone. The arrogance of these people to think that they could still hold on despite all that, quite frankly, was offensive. And furthermore, it was the peak of we own this and you can't do anything without us. Despite the fact that no one owns hockey, no one that works at Hockey Canada owns hockey, but that is the attitude that Scott Smith and the rest of these people had. And you are not going to hear, I think, that level of criticism in a lot of places. I think that the coverage in hockey journalism circles of this particular story, not in all cases, but in some cases, has been a little softer than it needs to be. But Scott Smith had to be gone. It's good that he is gone. And I don't know what becomes of Hockey Canada now. I think they need to do a whole new reshuffle of the organization. Everything needs to change. But this, it just has to happen this way. Scott Smith having the audacity to present medals to the Canadian women's team when they won a gold this summer, despite the fact that he was mired in controversy, showed this man had learned nothing from what had gone on. Andrea Skinner going to Ottawa and doing the performance that she had did showed that she learned nothing from what has gone on. Learned literally nothing. These people had to go. So I don't know what's next. Like I said, is it a new organization? Is it something with a different name? Is it a whole entirely revamped way that hockey is governed in this country? I have no idea. But I know the people that were there had to be gone for it to survive. And now they are gone. Step one complete. Check. That's all the thoughts I've got on that for now, but I think we will be talking about it a little bit coming up on the Friday Roundtable this week. Just a little bit, depending on how the rest of the news goes. Wrapping up real quick. Municipal election. We have less than 2 weeks to go until that. I'm not sure what our coverage is going to look like, and I'm going to ask you, dear podcast listener, to help me out with something. So there's something called Twitter Spaces, right? Where you can go and then there's, you know, an online conversation that sounds a little bit like a talk radio show that people can host on that website, right? Tell me, and you can email me, cneedles at blackburnmedia.ca, or you can tweet me at Needles on News. Is that something you'd be interested in listening to me do on election night? I'm not sure how the tech would work, and I haven't dove too deep into how that would be possible and what that would mean. But is that something you'd be interested in listening to? Or are you going to be out, you're going to be doing campaign stuff or whatever it happens to be? Just tell me either way. You can contact me in those ways and we'll figure out what we can do. But I'm wondering about that, and that's something we can make work. That's a conversation that perhaps can be had in the not too distant future here. Well, obviously, less than 2 weeks. Speaking of the next 2 weeks, here's what I'm watching. I am watching the ward races. Not all of them, but some of them. Here are the ward races I'm watching, and I'm going to get into this a little bit deeper on next week's podcast. And I'm not going to get too deep into why I'm watching these particular races, but you can imagine it's because I don't know who's going to win in most cases. And there are some where I know who is going to win, but I'm just curious as to how it shakes down. Races I'm watching closely: Ward 1, Ward 3, Ward 4, Ward 5, Ward 6, Ward 11, and I think that's about it. Maybe 14. I look at the odds of who is going to win some of these other races and think to myself, this may be about decided or close to it. Maybe there are some surprises coming, but I'm talking to a lot of people who are politically connected in the city on various parts of the political spectrum. And those are the races they're watching closely for reasons that we'll get into on a podcast a week from now. Here's what I think, and I'm going to get deeper into this as well. Here's what I think will wind up deciding who wins some of these close races. Yeah, you know, sign game and door knocking game. Those are all good things to have. Good positions, good political connections, all great. This is an election where we're staring very, very hard at the potential of 1 out of 4 eligible voters going to the polls. 25%. I think we'll beat that number, but not by a lot. So if that's the case, and a lot of people are staying home, who's going to make sure their people are not staying home? And in the closest wards, I suspect you will find the campaign with the most sophisticated voter turnout software, database, whatever you want to call it. That's the campaign that's going to win. I really do believe that that is what you are going to find. And that is what is going to decide a couple of these races. Who makes the decision to have those types of pieces of infrastructure for their campaign? Because getting your people to the polls, when there's going to be so many folks who are staying home, that's going to wind up being the decider in a lot of places. So that's what I'm keeping an eye on going into next week. And we're going to talk about that next week. Not sure who the guest is going to be yet. We're going back and forth on a few things, but we're going to talk about that next week. More of the Craig Needles podcast is available, of course, at classicrock981.com and londonnewstoday.ca. You're looking for an appropriate episode for today. May I suggest to you Budweiser Gardens 20th anniversary. Talk with Brian Ohl last week about that 20th anniversary. Today is, in fact, the anniversary. He talks about the time that Bruce Springsteen almost came here. That was a cool story. So that is a conversation from last week here on the Craig Needles podcast. And of course, you can find that on your favorite podcast app at classicrock981.com or londonnewstoday.ca. The Craig Needles podcast, of course, is brought to you by Lexus of London. Lifestyle with a drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting at Lexus of London. Luxury redefined. You can choose yours today at the award-winning Lexus of London, 1065 Warncliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com.
The Craig Needles Podcast is a presentation of the Blackburn Media Podcast Network.